Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. Today we go back to the mid-18th century and one of Europe's biggest natural disasters, the day an earthquake flattened the capital of Portugal. Simon Watts reports.
It's All Saints' Day in November 1755, for the people of Lisbon a day of special church services, and for Thomas Chase, a young British merchant, his birthday.
On the day that made me 26 years of age, I was alone in my bedchamber, when a shaking of the ground, gentle at first, but gradually increasing to greater violence, alarmed me so much that, turning round to look at the windows, the glass seemed to be falling out.
Chase rushed to the top floor of his house to see what was happening in the rest of the city. Then the room started to collapse.
Every stone in the walls grinding, as did all the walls of the other houses, one against another, made the most dreadful jumbling noise ears have ever heard. Turning my eyes quick to the front of the room, I saw the tops of the two pillars meet. I immediately felt myself falling. And then, just as if waking from a dream with confused ideas, I came to myself.
When he regained consciousness, Chase realised he'd fallen between two semi-collapsed buildings. Trapped, he searched through the rubble and eventually found a way out.
I found a narrow passage into a little room where stood a Portuguese man covered with dust who, the moment he saw me coming that way, started back and crossing himself all over, cried out, "Jesus, Mary and Joseph, who are you? Where do you come from?" This made me examine myself, which before I had not time to do. My right arm hung down before me, motionless. The right ankle swelled to a prodigious size, with a fountain of blood spurting upwards from it. The poor man flew directly out of the door.
The young merchant was one of the many British traders in Lisbon. They'd been attracted to one of the most prosperous cities in the world.
Lisbon was a very different city from most in Europe. The look of the place had very much been determined by Portugal's great ventures overseas.
Edward Pace, author of Wrath of God, The Great Lisbon Earthquake.
Portuguese seafarers had discovered Brazil, discovered the Indies, and immense riches had flowed back to Lisbon from this. There were tremendous monasteries on a huge scale, palaces and so forth. It was a very striking sight indeed for anybody coming to the city for the first time, but also unfamiliar in that it was very much southern Europe. Portuguese architecture and so forth had been heavily influenced by the East and also by Islamic architecture.
Could you just describe the quake itself?
The quake is still one of the largest ever recorded in history. There were three tremors altogether. The second tremor was undoubtedly the greatest, and this has subsequently been measured or assessed at being between 8.75 and 9 on the Richter scale. The earthquake could be felt up to about 1,300 miles away.
The quake killed thousands of people, many of them while they were in church. Survivors sought safety in a huge open square by the Tagus River. Among them, Mr. Braddock, another English merchant.
Here I have found a prodigious concourse of people of both sexes, and of all ranks and conditions, among whom I observed some of the principal canons of the patriarchal church in their purple robes and rochettes, several priests who had run from the altar in their sacerdotal vestments in the midst of their celebrating mass, ladies half-dressed, and some without shoes. All these were on their knees at prayers, with the terrors of death in their countenance, crying out incessantly, "Misericordia meo Deus." In the midst of the devotion, the second great shock came on, and completed the ruin of those buildings which had already been much shattered.
There was more horror to come. The quake unleashed a tsunami in the Atlantic, which then worked its way up the river.
On a sudden, I heard a general outcry. "The sea is coming in. We shall all be lost." In an instant there appeared a large body of water rising, as it were, like a mountain. It came on, foaming and roaring, and rushed towards the shore with such impetuosity that we all immediately ran for our lives as fast as possible. Many were actually swept away. For my part, I had the narrowest escape, and should certainly have been lost had I not grasped a large beam that lay on the ground till the water returned to its channel, which it did almost at the same instant.
Mr. Braddock moved uphill to safety, but Thomas Chase was still having a tough time. After the quake and the tsunami, a third disaster struck Lisbon. Candles burning in the special church services helped start a huge fire. By this time, the young merchant was being treated at the home of a German merchant called Mr. Fogg. From his bed, Chase could see the flames approaching, and he feared his rescuer would abandon him.
I therefore begged it, with tears in my eyes, as the greatest favour, that before he found himself obliged to quit his house, he would either throw me over the gallery or any other way dispatch me, and not leave me in violent agonies to linger out a few hours and at last to die a most dreadful death. He desired me not to talk in that manner, assuring me most affectionately that he never intended to leave me, and if no other help came, he would himself carry me out upon his back.
True to his word, Mr. Fogg later arranged for Thomas Chase to be carried down to the square by the river. But even there, the flames were dangerous.
Two transport mules, running about loose, the harness of one of them caught fire, and blazing all over its back, made the mule gallop with the greatest speed backwards and forwards over the people. I guess the distance they might be from me was my security, till I heard someone cry out, "You're on fire!" And feeling my quilt snatched away, saw it thrown upon the ground. The fire was then stamped out, and the quilt removed to me again.
Later, Thomas Chase paid for a place on one of the boats which came to rescue survivors. He reached the country house of another British merchant.
Mr. Hake was astonished to hear the voice of a person who he had been informed the previous day was either dead or dying. Mr. Hake sent for the king's farrier, who was a famous bone setter. This man examined me immediately and declared that there was nothing broke but the arm, and I might do very well again. They carried me to a sort of tent made with carpets under a vine walk, where their beds were placed, and gave me strong white wine with bread and butter, which to me at that time was so exquisite and refreshing that they were afraid of giving me too much.
Lisbon was eventually rebuilt in a new style more resistant to earthquakes. The destruction of one of Europe's greatest cities also had a lasting impact on 18th century science and philosophy, says Edward Pace.
It is now viewed as being a major watershed. On the scientific front, it was the most closely investigated earthquake in history. We have an immense bank of first-hand accounts of the effects. And out of this, scientists started to analyse what had happened without mentioning God. Now, as far as thought is concerned, the ruling philosophy in Europe dictated that we lived in the best of all possible worlds, that even in these disasters there was divine providence, that God was working some plan, that it was not our place to question. Well, by the end of 1755, Voltaire, in his poem on the disaster at Lisbon, had fired the first salvo in what was to be one of the major philosophical debates ever in history, questioning the God that could see any good at all coming out of something as horrific as the Lisbon earthquake.
Edward Pace ending that report by Simon Watts. That edition of Sporting Witness was a Whistledown production for BBC World Service. For details of our complete range of podcasts and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.